The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Epochs, where once again I shall be continuing my narrative of the decline and fall of the Roman Republic. If you remember last time, we left off where Crassus had got himself killed out in the east. Julia had unfortunately died in childbirth, as had the baby, very sadly. And so now the showdown boiling away between Pompey and Caesar, the final showdown. So I'll let Appian continue the story. He says this, quote, "Now that Pompey had completed the reforms which required aristocratic power, he made Scipio his colleague for the rest of the year. After this, others held the consular authority, but Pompey exercised an undiminished degree of supervision and control." See, that's the thing I've said before, haven't I? In a republic, it's quite easy to subvert a republic. If you just have control of the leaders of the offices, then you don't need to hold the office yourself. If they're in your pocket one way or the other, if they're your creature, then you don't even need to hold the office anymore. That is one of the problems with any real democracy or any sort of open republic, anything like that. Unfortunately, that is a perennial issue. Appian continues. "Indeed, at that time, he, Pompey, was the only person who mattered in Rome, as the Senate strongly favoured him, both because it resented Caesar for ignoring it during his own consulship, and because he had promptly tackled the unhealthy state of the Republic without being troublesome or oppressive to any of its members. The exiles flocked to Caesar and advised him to beware of Pompey because the law against bribery was particularly aimed at himself." So Rome really beginning to fracture into two camps, just two factions. You're either with Pompey or you're with Caesar. "Caesar reassured them and spoke well of Pompey, but persuaded the tribunes to propose a law to permit him, Caesar, to stand in absentia for a second consulship. This was passed without opposition while Pompey was still consul. Caesar, however, expected that the Senate would make some move against him and was afraid of becoming a private citizen at the mercy of his enemies." So once again, there's that thread of the story that if Caesar ever loses high office and becomes just a private citizen once again, Cato, as well as many, many other enemies, but probably the leader of them, Cato, will just drag him through the courts and ruin him. Either exile, probably not execution, but certainly exile and being ruined financially and just end his political career. Because they've got Caesar on a number of things now. The bribery he openly engaged in, although everyone's more or less openly engaging in it, including Cato himself, if you go back and watch the Cato episodes once or twice. The bribery side of things, but also Cato's talking about how Caesar's war against the Gauls is unjust, that it's a war of aggression, that the Gauls didn't do nothing to Rome, and that Caesar is just engaging in this sort of private war. And well, again, Cato sort of has a point. He's not entirely wrong, but of course it's political, isn't it? He's going after any thread he can to prosecute Caesar, or would do if Caesar was a private citizen. Appian continues, "Scheming, therefore, to retain power," that Caesar this is, "until he was elected consul, he requested the Senate to grant him a small extension of his existing governorship of Gaul, or of part of Gaul. When Marcellus, Pompey's successor as consul, blocked this. Caesar is said to have replied to the person who brought him the news by tapping the hilt of his sword and saying, "This will give me it." Quite an aggressive gesture, if true. Now, most people agree, even Caesar's detractors, all agree to varying extents that Caesar's being sort of painted into a corner. Well, he certainly doesn't really have a choice but to try and retain high office and therefore immunity from prosecution. But if they keep forcing him, he won't have much other choice but resort to force. Or, you know, allow himself to be destroyed. It's one or the other. Now, Cato and others, for many, many a year, since the Catiline conspiracy, 10 years ago or more, people like Cato have been saying, Caesar is a tyrant in waiting. He means to dominate Rome absolutely and be the only man of importance in Rome. Well, it's becoming sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more they block him, the more they paint him into a corner, the more that's becoming true. Now, people that are fans of Caesar or defend Caesar, they say, and I suppose I'm mildly in that camp, would say, well, you're not leaving him any choice. Not leaving him any choice, though. So what's it going to be? I said in my Cato episode, I think a lot of the reason that the Republic finally died, finally there was a civil war, full-blown civil war, you can lay at the feet of Cato. If Cato had been able to bend one way or the other, either let Pompey or Caesar be preeminent, it might not have come to a full civil war where thousands and thousands of Romans are killed and the Republic does die, sort of undeniably. I say undeniably. Some people argue that it didn't really die at that point, but still, most will say it's in and around this time frame. I want to cut back now to Pompey and what Plutarch tells us in his Life of Pompey about this period, or a little bit before what I just talked about, how Pompey conducts himself whilst Caesar is still away and Pompey is the preeminent man in Rome, how he conducts himself. So Plutarch says this, quote, "Pompey did, in fact, once say in a speech to the people that he had always come into office earlier than he had expected and had always laid down his offices more quickly than others had expected. And certainly he could always point to the way in which he had disbanded his armies to prove the truth of this." Yeah, Pompey really isn't a Sulla-type tyrant. He really never really planned to do what Caesar did, crossing the Rubicon and sparking off a civil war. When he returned from the east after his final success against Mithridates and or against the pirates, he could have entered Rome like a Sulla and by force just made himself the absolute undisputed ruler, a king in all but name. He could have done it after that as well, when he sort of invested the city of Rome with troops in his second consulship with Crassus in order to defeat the populares and restore order after Clodius was murdered. He could have done it then as well, just become a Sulla, but he didn't. It seems like it's fair to say it's not really in his character. That's not what he wanted to do. I mean, it's not what Caesar wanted to do. Later, Caesar says in a letter to Cicero, once the war had kicked off, he says to Cicero, look, if I'm going to win this thing, the civil war's happened now, it's happening. If I'm going to win this thing, I'm going to do it through mercy and clemency. The only other way to go is to be a Sulla, and I'm not going to do that. I refuse to do that, i.e. round up a few thousand of his political enemies, Roman citizens, senators and things, and just have them all killed. Caesar doesn't do that. He never does that. So neither Pompey nor Caesar are a Sulla, and yet it still comes to civil war. Plutarch continues, talking explicitly about Pompey. Apart from this, he took no exceptional or revolutionary measures. He tried to give the impression not of distrusting Caesar, but rather of tolerating him and not taking him seriously. He soon saw, however, that since the citizens were bribed, the magistracies were not going at all the way he wished, and he allowed a state of affairs to come into existence where there was no government at all. People at once began to talk of the necessity of a dictatorship, and the tribune Lucilius first ventured to bring the subject forward, openly advising the people to choose Pompey as dictator. This proposal was attacked by Cato, because remember, Cato's whole idea is that there should be no single man, even if it's Pompey. Cato, obviously, and as the story goes on, you'll see, would much prefer Pompey if there has to be one man at the top. He much, much, much prefer Pompey. He hates Caesar, but still he doesn't want Pompey either. He doesn't want anyone, any single man. That's the whole idea of the Roman Republic and having two consuls that only rule for 1 year. So he doesn't want Pompey either. So this proposal was attacked by Cato, and Lucilius very nearly lost his tribuneship. While on Pompey's behalf, many of his friends came forward and stated that he neither asked nor wanted to be dictator. Cato then made a speech congratulating Pompey and urging him to support the cause of law and order. So Cato, you can imagine through gritted teeth, much to his own chagrin, will back Pompey if it comes to it. If it's a choice of lesser evils, Cato goes with Pompey. As a result of this moral pressure, Pompey, for the time being, did so, and Domitius and Messala were made consuls. Later, however, Rome was again without a government, and people began to be still more outspoken in agitating for a dictatorship. Cato and his party, because remember, Cato represents a whole party, a big, powerful faction, arguably the biggest Optimate faction of the senatorial order. Cato and his party, fearing that they might be forced to give way to this agitation, decided to let Pompey have a kind of office which was defined by law, so as to keep him out of the absolute power and authority which would be his as a dictator. So Bibulus, who is Cato's creature and relation by marriage, who was no friend to Pompey, first proposed to the Senate that Pompey should be chosen as sole consul. In this way, he said, Rome would either be saved from the present state of anarchy, or, if subjected, would at least be subject to her ablest citizen. So again, the lesser of two evils is their calculation. The proposal, coming from Bibulus, seemed strange enough. Cato then rose to speak and led everyone to expect that he would speak against it. But when silence was made for him, he said that he personally would not have proposed the motion before the House, but now that it had been proposed by someone else, he recommended them to adopt it, since, in his view, any government was better than none, and he thought that Pompey, in such disturbed times, was likely to govern better than anyone else. The Senate accepted the proposal and decreed that Pompey, if elected consul, should hold the office alone, but that if he himself should desire a colleague, he should be empowered, after the expiry of 2 months, to choose whomsoever he saw fit. So Cato realises he has to back one of the horses, Pompey or Caesar, and it would never, ever be Caesar. Never. Ever since the Catiline conspiracy, Cato despised Caesar. So even though he's not a natural bedfellow of Pompey, he's got to back one of the horses, so it is Pompey. Plutarch goes on. In this way, Pompey became consul and was declared so by Sulpicius. Pompey then made friendly overtures to Cato, expressing his great gratitude to him for what he had done, and invited him to give advice in a private capacity on how the government should be run. Cato, however, would not admit that Pompey had any reason to be grateful to him. His speech, he said, had been made entirely in the interests of Rome and not at all for Pompey's sake. As for advice, he was quite prepared to give it, if asked, in a private capacity, and if he were not asked, he would certainly say what he thought in public. That was typical of Cato. End quote. Yeah, absolutely. That's typical of Cato. Being difficult, it seems, when there's no real need to be. Classic Cato. If you haven't watched them, I do advise go back and watch my few episodes on Cato. Okay, Plutarch again. Pompey now entered Rome and married Cornelia, a daughter of Metellius Scipio. Again, rebuffing any idea that he would remarry into Caesar's family. She was not a virgin, but had recently been left a widow by her first husband, Publius, the son of Crassus, who had been killed in Parthia. If you remember, his head paraded before the Crassus, a horrible thing. The young woman had many charming qualities apart from her youth and beauty. She had a great knowledge of literature, of playing the lyre, and of geometry, and she was a regular and intelligent listener to lectures on philosophy. Moreover, her character was quite free of that gracelessness and pretentiousness which too often affect young women who possess such accomplishments. No fault could be found with her father's family or reputation. Nevertheless, there were some who disapproved of the marriage because of the disparity in years. Again, she was much younger than Pompey. Pompey's getting on a bit now. Pompey also came in for some criticism for neglecting his responsibilities to the city at such a time. Rome had chosen him as her physician and put herself into his sole charge. Yet here he was with garlands on his head celebrating a wedding when he ought to have considered that his very consulship was a public calamity, since it would never have been given to him in such an illegal way if his country had been prosperous. Then there was his conduct in presiding over the courts, dealing with bribery and corruption, and introducing laws regulating the procedure at the trials. Here, in general, his behaviour as an arbiter was dignified and beyond reproach. His presence in the courts with an armed force had the effect of making the courtroom safe, orderly and quiet. Yet when his father-in-law, Scipio, was put on trial, he summoned the 360 members of the jury to his own house and asked them to acquit the defendant, and the prosecutor abandoned the case when he saw Scipio being escorted out of the forum by the jury. So once again, Pompey found that he was being badly spoken of. Things became still worse when, after he had passed a law putting an end to the practice of making speeches in praise of people under trial, he himself came into court to make a speech in praise of Plancus. Cato happened to be a member of the jury on this occasion, and he clapped his hands over his ears, saying that it was not right for him to listen to these speeches of praise when they were illegal. As a result, Cato was removed from the jury before he had the chance of voting, but nevertheless, Plancus was convicted by the other votes, much to the discredit of Pompey. A few days afterwards, Hypatius, a man of consular rank, who had been prosecuted in the courts, waited for Pompey to return from his bath to his supper, and then fell down before him, clasping his knees and imploring him for help. But Pompey passed by him disdainfully and said that, apart from spoiling his supper, he was achieving nothing. This gave him the reputation of being anything but impartial, and he was much blamed for it. In other respects, however, he did well and succeeded in getting the situation under control. For the last 5 months of his year of office, he chose his father-in-law to be his colleague. It was also voted that he should keep his provinces for another period of 4 years, and that he should receive 1,000 talents each year for the payment and general organisation of his armies. End quote. So, once again, Pompey's, he's not a king in all but name. He's not pulling a Sulla, but he is riding roughshod over the rule of law in all sorts of ways, and fiddling with the system in sort of fairly clearly illegal ways, being a little bit haughty, and the whole of Rome isn't behind him. The people love him, by and large, but he is making enemies, certainly. But yeah, even though he isn't a king in all but name, he is the power in Rome. I'll let Plutarch continue. He says this, quote, "It was this that gave occasion to some of Caesar's friends to claim that for Caesar too, who was fighting so continuously for the empire, some consideration ought to be shown. Either, they said, he ought to have another consulship, or else his command ought to be prolonged, so that he, who had done the work, should continue in power and enjoy his honours in peace instead of being deprived of all his glory by some successor who might be appointed." There was a conflict of opinion over this, and Pompey, giving the impression that out of goodwill to Caesar he was trying to calm down any ill feeling that might exist towards him, said that he had letters from Caesar which showed that he wanted to be relieved of his command and be replaced by a successor. It would be only right, however, that he should be allowed to stand for the consulship even in his absence. Cato and his party opposed this suggestion. Caesar, they said, must lay down his arms and become an ordinary citizen before securing any favour from his fellow citizens. Pompey raised no great objections to this, but behaved rather as though he had been overruled, and as a result increased people's suspicions of what his real feelings towards Caesar were. He also sent to Caesar and, on the pretext of the Parthian War, asked for the return of the troops which he had lent him. Caesar knew well enough why these soldiers were being asked for, but he sent them back after having given them very generous rewards for their services. End quote. So Caesar, of course, is absolutely no fool. Knows the way it's going. He knows that his offers of a further marriage after Julia were rebuffed, and that Pompey isn't doing absolutely everything in his power to shore up Caesar's position in his absence, as he was doing earlier on during the first triumvirate when Crassus was still alive. Pompey's not doing that anymore. Caesar sees this. Everyone sort of knows the way it's going. And Pompey asking for those couple of legions back, Caesar knows why that would be. You know, it's pretty much a zero-sum game. There's a finite number of legions. So if Caesar has two less and Pompey has two more, well, if it came to blows, then Pompey is going to want, even need, those legions. But Caesar, wily as ever, makes sure he rewards and pays those soldiers. And that's no small detail. Soldiers, nearly always, but certainly in this period of the late Republic, will be much more loyal to the guy that actually pays them, or even sometimes Caesar overpaid them, they're much more likely to remain loyal to that general, to that person, kind of obviously. Caesar's been described many a time as a soldier's soldier, as a soldier's general, and that nearly all legions that ever fought under Caesar are very, very loyal to him. Again, a result of the Marian reforms.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts, we do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.